ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie.
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay, tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Chalk Talk is your weekly home for football news on Penguin Radio.
Whack 88! Whack 88! Hut, hut!
We will take an in-depth look at some of the biggest news and notes from around the football world so you can stay up to date on some of the biggest stories and headlines. It doesn't matter if they are lining up on Sundays at Lambeau.
It's free play. Rodgers has made a living of this. Takes a shot downfield. And James Jones and Rodgers have done it again.
Or if they're on campus inside of the Big House.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State. Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Chalk Talk has it all. And now, radio.dominican.edu and Penguin Radio presents Chalk Talk. Let's head into the studio and join your host, Jeff Sefford.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We've got a great show lined up for you here this evening. A lot of stuff to get to. News in coming out of the NFL today with involving the Colts, and still have three unbeatens left in the National Football League. Joseph Randall in news, now a free agent running back. He was released last week by the Dallas Cowboys, but he is in the news this week. We'll get to see what's going on with him. And some more injury news to hit on as well in the NFL and in college football. Our next segment, after we'll take a break, we'll talk about the playoff selections. Week two of the playoff selections going on this week. The second week that those will be coming out. Last week we saw Clemson with the number one spot. There's a little bit of uncertainty with Clemson with that number one position due to a couple of other teams' performances. We'll see what happens with that. And the selection show is going on right now. Reese Davis and the crew are on live on ESPN. But we will be talking about the rankings in our second segment of the show, so stay tuned. In our last segment, we're going to talk about the whole situation going on at the University of Missouri with their football program, with the players, and the whole racial situation that's been brewing over there, and just have some general discussion on that topic and what this means for the issue of racism in the United States. All right, so that's going to be our show for this afternoon, and it's kind of an interesting thing, but we're halfway through officially now the NFL season. Every team has now played at least 8 games to this point. A lot of teams have played 9, and we still have a lot of things to figure out, that's for sure. But one of the biggest headlines to this point this season has to be the injuries at the quarterback position, and today another big injury comes to fruition out of Indianapolis. Breaking news coming out today. Their quarterback Andrew Luck, who had a little bit of a shaky start this season, had 12 interceptions going into the game last week, but they did have a big win on Sunday, a very much must-needed win for the Colts on Sunday against the undefeated Denver Broncos, but they found out today that in the game, Andrew Luck suffered a lacerated spleen injury, and now Andrew Luck will miss 2 to 6 weeks with that injury. And now, the one thing you got to think is, wow, how big was that win now over the Denver Broncos now that Andrew Luck will be injured? Because you look at it, whew, they'd be in some deep trouble if they were in a position where they had to win some, really have to win some games without Andrew Luck. Now, sitting where they are, they're sitting at 4-5, and I understand that's not a great position for most teams to be in, but they have the luxury of playing in the AFC South, so there's definitely some leeway there, as that is definitely the worst division in football this season. The AFC South took that, the NFC South took that crown last year, but that is a much improved division from a year ago. And but the question has to be asked, is there a team out there that can chase down the Colts? And I'm not sure if there is. And if there is a team that can do it, I would have to think it would be the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Titans. And this is why I say it, is because those two teams in that 2 to 6 week period play each other twice. So that would give one of those two teams an opportunity to get some division wins and get some wins in general. So that could maybe be something where they could catch up. And you look at where the Houston Texans are as well. That the Houston Texans have to be licking their chops. I mean, this week is a huge game for them now, coming up against the Cincinnati Bengals on Monday Night Football. If they win that game, they're sitting at 3-5. They'd be tied for first. The Colts would have the tiebreaker because the Colts defeated Houston earlier this year on a Thursday night game, but still sitting at 4-5, and wow, with all the things the Houston Texans have gone through, we basically left them for dead a couple weeks ago when we were talking about Ryan Mallett leaving and the problems they've had with at the quarterback position and defensively as well, that you wouldn't think that they'd be even close to this position, but with where the Colts have been this year, here they are, and that's one thing they got to look at if you're the Texans. And if you're the Colts, you know, things aren't all over yet. And one silver lining for them is that they did pick up that huge win on Sunday. That's one thing I've already mentioned. And that they have a bye week this week. So that they'll give Andrew Luck one extra week where they won't have to worry about playing. And their backup quarterback, Matt Hasselbeck, has been in the lineup already twice this season, and obviously has had a lot of experience as a starting quarterback in the National Football League going back to his days in Seattle. I mean, a lot of people forget he was an NFC champion with the Seahawks one year, and I believe it was 2006 when they went to the Super Bowl. They ended up losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was the Bill Cowher and Jerome Bennis team when Jerome Bennis was in his final season, you know, that storybook ending. We all remember how that one went. And Matt Hasselbeck he's been around a long time. He's 40 years old. And the main thing is that I think the Colts would have to be worried about is if Hasselbeck has to play for a long period of time, is how is he going to be able to hold up? And Trent Dilfer was talking about that today on a radio interview. He was on ESPN Radio this morning, and he was talking about his experience when he was in a similar position in his career with, it was the 49ers. He had to make some spot starts for the 49ers, and he's basically was saying the first couple weeks he felt okay, everything was all right, but then after a few weeks, his body started to feel old and, you know, just beat up, and it just was hard for him to come back week to week. And, you know, the main thing for Hasselbeck is he going to be able to hold up? You know, we know he can play some football, and, you know, he is smart and he understands the game extremely well. That's not the problem. It's his body, you know, being 40 years old, he's not a spring chicken anymore. And he's not that young, confident quarterback who's saying a score, you know, if you remember that playoff game from Green Bay a number of years ago, of course, famously his first pass in That overtime game was intercepted and ran back for a touchdown by Al Harris, but that's a different story altogether. And in other injury news, to kind of move on from this Andrew Luck situation, Ben Roethlisberger, again, has gone down for the second time this season with an ankle injury. They're saying they're expecting him to be out for a couple of weeks, probably 2 weeks. That's what they're saying. The Steelers, although haven't officially ruled out Ben Roethlisberger for the game against the Browns, but part of that is because, I mean, come on, let's be honest here. It's the Steelers and the Browns. The Steelers aren't going to give the Browns any type of a advantage at all. We know how much these two franchises dislike each other, so I'm sure that is part of the reason why they're saying this, is that they want to try to force the Browns to, you know, do something about watching take on Brent Roethlisberger, but I'm not buying it at all, and I'm sure that the Browns aren't either. And on the other side of the ball in that game, Josh McCown's status is also up in the air for Sunday. He missed last week's game against the Bengals. Johnny Manziel was in there in his stead, so how about that? This Browns-Steelers game for this week might see Landry Jones starting for the Steelers, and Johnny Manziel starting for the Browns. And hey, what the heck? An old Big 12 rivalry. You got Landry Jones from Oklahoma and Johnny Manziel from Texas A&M. I don't believe the two quarterbacks' careers overlapped in any way, or if they ever played against each other. I feel like Landry Jones was a little bit before Johnny Manziel. I could be wrong, but they were in the same general time frame. Obviously, this is Landry Jones has been in the league 4 or 5 years, and Johnny Manziel, this is his second year in the league. So it's possible that there was some layover from that. But still an interesting game to look at, and it will definitely be an interesting storyline to watch unfold, especially if it ends up being the battle of the backups. And more, geez, it's just a quarterback injury type of day on our show this afternoon. We're going to go to the other end of the spectrum. Instead of talking about an injury of a quarterback, we'll talk about an quarterback possibly coming back very soon. And Jerry Jones, the owner and general manager of the Dallas Cowboys, basically came on the radio in a local station in Dallas today and basically said that Tony Romo is going to be coming back in week 11 for the Dallas Cowboys. And that's something that may be a little too little too late. They had that really tough loss on Sunday night. Jordan Matthews taking in a touchdown in overtime to seal the victory. Cowboys dropped to 2-6, their sixth straight loss since Tony Romo's been injured. And they face the Tampa Bay Bucks this week with Matt Castle behind center once again for the Cowboys. And if the Cowboys want to have any prayer to do anything in terms of making a run, they're definitely going to have to win this one to get their record to 3-6. Because you look at it, where the Cowboys are and where the division is, if the Cowboys were to get to 3-6 and then win out, or maybe lose one game, you would think that they would have still an opportunity. A 9 or 10 win Dallas Cowboy team would have the opportunity to make the postseason. I mean, the NFC East has been a little bit of a struggle this season, teams beating each other, and none really of the teams have been able to come out of the mess in that division. And so that might keep Dallas in it, and Dallas will have a lot of challenges coming up for that, and they have a lot of challenging games down the stretch is what will definitely make this tough. They have the Panthers on Thanksgiving Day. A couple weeks later, they have to go play at Lambeau Field. That's not going to be an easy task. And they have a game against the Bills. They play the Jets. I mean, this is going to be a tough task for the Cowboys, even with a healthy Tony Romo and Dez Bryant coming back. But I mean, you never know. And this team is a team that's really wanted to be a Super Bowl contender this season, and injuries have just kind of gotten in the way. And we've seen times before where when the quarterbacks come back from an injury, the team's gotten hot, and sometimes if you can just get yourself into the tournament, that's all that matters. And if you're playing good ball at the right time, then you can go on a run, and who knows what can happen from there. In more Dallas Cowboy news, or Dallas Cowboy-related news, Joseph Randall has been suspended by the NFL for 4 games. The situation is likely linked to an incident that happened last offseason in Kansas, where Randall had an alleged confrontation with the mother of his child. He reportedly pulled a gun on the woman, and this just sounds like a pretty bad deal for Joseph Randall, and he should probably feel lucky that this situation didn't land him behind bars. And the one question you definitely have to ask as well is this the end of Joseph Randall's career? I mean, that's a legitimate question to ask. He was released by the Cowboys, and partially had to be because of this happening. He was seen to be a replacement for DeMarco Murray when DeMarco Murray left, but with Darren McFadden's performance this season, really relatively surprising performance, that's been taken a little bit of the pressure off of that whole situation for the Cowboys. And when you got a guy in your locker room that's not doing any good and he's had this situation kind of swirling around him, the Cowboys are kind of tied. Their hands are tied. And no, and I mean, I understand a lot of people would look at this situation and maybe compare, well, how is this guy any different than Greg Hardy? And I'll tell you this is that the Greg Hardy situation is completely different, because that situation is kind of over and water under the bridge, so to speak. You know, he's already been to court. He's already been suspended for a year. You know, he served his suspension, and do I agree with what he did, or am I going to justify what he did? Absolutely not. I do not. I think Greg Hardy is also a lucky guy for not being behind bars. I mean, we've all seen the pictures now at this point of Greg Hardy's ex-girlfriend and the bruises, and we all know that we're in a place in society where this shouldn't stand, but that doesn't mean that Greg Hardy didn't deserve a second chance. I mean, these guys are held to too high of a standard, in my opinion. Let's not forget that football is, for these guys, is a job. You know, we watch football on Sundays because we love it and we think it's really cool. But for these guys, it's their livelihood. It puts food on the table. It feeds their families. You know, that's how they make a living. And because somebody made a mistake, you're going to tell him he can't work? That's just not how reality works. That's not how the world works. Like, maybe you'd be limited the type of jobs you could get, possibly, but maybe not. I mean, in this situation, Greg Hardy didn't even have any charges filed, so there would be no reason for an employer to even know this type of information. And also, just to throw this out there as well, how much of this issue with Greg Hardy is a gender thing? Why is the situation with Hope Solo and with the women's soccer team any different? I mean, she's looked at as an American hero and star from her experiences in the World Cup, but yet she has this case of domestic abuse hanging over her head as well. And people, what, are people just shoving it under the rug? It's just a little bit of a conundrum for me, and I know it kind of went off topic a little bit there, but just a interesting situation there, and for the Cowboys, it's been an interesting year, that's for sure, and it's been a little bit of a soap opera to this point for the Dallas Cowboys, but, you know, maybe their knight in shining armor might be riding in with Tony Romo and his healthy right shoulder. All right, and with that, we are going to head to the break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the college football playoff rankings, talk about the top four, who is in. We'll talk about the rest of the top 10 and who is maybe on the way in or has a good chance to be in, and who teams, what teams should be on the lookout on Saturday. You're listening to Chalk Talk. I'm Jeff Safford, and we will be right back after a few messages. Stay with us.
Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey kids, let mom help with your science project.
This new mom wants her kids' science project to thrive. Too bad she hasn't cracked a science book since 1985.
A metathesis reaction?
Compounds, mixtures, and elements. Even this baking soda volcano is too big of an experiment. Whoa. Now she's completely forgotten the periodic table. Now she's burning a hole through the kitchen table.
Burning with science.
But her kids' love for their mom is truly transparent. Proof you don't have to be perfect to be the perfect parent.
Don't tell Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of siblings in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk. You're on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. Make sure you stay tuned for a bunch of Penguin Radio content for this evening. Coming up from 4 to 5 p.m., we'll have Uncovered with DJ Soundwave, as we do every Tuesday evening. She will be bringing you some music from YouTube cover artists. And also, stay tuned for a special presentation. For the first time this year, Penguins basketball is back at 7 p.m. Their first game, women's action, coming up at 7 p.m., an exhibition game against CSU Maritime, Cal Maritime. And at 7 p.m., Stu Horn will be there on the call for that one at 7 p.m. A lot of interesting things to be looking at for the women's Penguins basketball team this season. And we will have all of the home women's Penguin games for you here on radio.dominican.edu. We will also have all of the men games for you this season as well. We hope that both of the teams have good seasons, and go Penguins. All right, moving on to our next topic of the show, talking about college football. And just moments ago, a few minutes ago, the second week of the playoff committee's playoff selections have been released. Of course, the top four selections at the end of the season will be the four teams playing in the college football playoff. And New Year's, I believe it is on New Year's Eve, the two semifinal games. Yes, New Year's Eve will be when these two games are happening. The number one team versus the number four team, and the number two team against the number three team. And the top four teams are, drumroll please, Clemson comes in at number one. There was a little bit of a question on where they would be placed this week. Some people thought maybe Alabama would be able to jump up into that number one slot after that impressive victory against LSU this past week, but not the case. However, the Crimson Tide do come in, Alabama, at number two in the rankings. Number three, same as last week, OHIO, Ohio State. The Buckeyes come in at number three. They made it through the game last week. JT Barrett was out due to that whole situation with the DUI. He will be coming back this week. I couldn't believe this. Urban Meyer tried to say it would depend on how he performed in practice. Oh, come on, Urban Meyer. Give me a break. Are you serious? Oh, that's a belly laugher for me. Like, that's unreal. Anyway, and the last team in the top four playoff, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. The Golden Domers have broken into the top four. They were just outside the top four last week. They find their way in this week. They do not have a tough game coming this week. They're facing a 3-6 Wake Forest team at home at Notre Dame Stadium. So that should be a relatively easy win for them. Coming in at number five, moving on to the rest of the top ten as the teams on the outside looking in, we got the Iowa Hawkeyes, the surprisingly undefeated Iowa Hawkeyes, who just every week it seems like they just keep showing up, and nobody really seems to know how they're doing it or how they've gotten to this point, but they're here, and I don't know what the heck the college football committee would do if Iowa is able to run the table for the regular season, get to the Big Ten championship game, and then beat Ohio State. How would they be able to keep an undefeated Big Ten champion out of the college football playoff, even though their schedule has not been the toughest? They do have a few quality wins. Northwestern, that was a good win. They beat Wisconsin on the road. That's probably their best win to this point, is Wisconsin on the road. But you got to point to that big one coming up for them in a couple weeks. If they're able to run the table, they got to focus on winning the Big Ten championship and beating a team like Ohio State, Michigan State, or even Michigan is in the mix as well. At number six, the Baylor Bears come in at number six. They have a big one coming up this week. They're facing the Oklahoma Sooners at home. That'll be one of Baylor's biggest tests to this point. And Oklahoma is just outside of the top 10, comes in at number 11 in the rankings. The team that made the farthest drop out of the top, or a team that has dropped out of the top 10, is Florida. You can understand why they dropped out, as they just squeaked by probably the worst team in the SEC, the Vanderbilt Commodores, on Saturday. Coming in at number seven, the Stanford Cardinal coming in. They've had a great season in the Pac-12. They're the only undefeated left in the Pac-12, sitting with a 7-0 record in the conference. They have a very interesting game coming up this week. The Oregon Ducks coming up from Eugene, or I should say coming down from Eugene, flying south to Palo Alto for this one. And it's going to be on 4:30 on Saturday, late Saturday afternoon. And I'm excited for this game. I think this could be one of the best games of the weekend. Because for one reason is that, make no mistake about it, the Ducks are back. They've got it figured out on offense now. And a lot of people didn't really notice because it was on so late last Saturday, play their game against the Bears, and because of all the other big games that were going on at the same time. But the Ducks broke the school record on Saturday for total yards of offense. They had over 700 yards, almost 800 yards of total offense. Vernon Adams looked comfortable. Royce Freeman running the ball. And this team has got their mojo back on offense. And that's the type of team that the Ducks are. They're a team that's run by their offense. So it'll be tough to see. It'll be interesting to see how Stanford responds to playing an Oregon team that I think a lot of people expected to see from the beginning. Coming in at number 8 is Oklahoma State. The Oklahoma State Cowboys, who had that big, huge win last Saturday against TCU. TCU was ranked in this number 8 slot last week. And they have obviously dropped out of the top 10 after that loss. At Oklahoma State, it was really an impressive win for them. And the two teams that gained the most definitely from this past week is definitely Oklahoma State and Alabama. Both these teams did a ton of favors for themselves. I mean, Alabama, they did exactly what they needed to do. They just punched LSU in the mouth and made a statement to America that they're a force to be reckoned with. You know, Leonard Fournette came in with sick numbers, absolutely insane numbers. Nobody had been able to stop him all season. And 13 carries, 13 yards for Fournette in that game. And I mean, that is a statement right there. When you see what Fournette has done against other teams this season, and boom, you know, and you just hit him in the mouth with that. And on the other side of the ball, you got Henry rushing for over 100 yards, 3 touchdowns, finishing runs with physical fashion. And this is just what you see out of Alabama this year. They just seem like a mean, rough-and-tumble team. And it's going to be a tough team to stop. But back to Oklahoma State, they also played a very complete game and gained a lot from this past week. They took Team TCU that had had a ton of success, who had on offense had really played well. You know, Trevon Boykin, a Heisman candidate, and they just dominated on both sides of the ball, really, and really showed how they are a very complete team. And that has been something that the Cowboys haven't been in years past. When you think back to a couple of years ago when Oklahoma State was in similar positions with the team, it was their offenses that just kind of carried the load. It was Dez Bryant. It was Brandon Wheaton playing quarterback. It was the high-flying attack. And their defense they would hope that their defense would have just enough to hold on. But not the case this year. Oklahoma State's defense is for real, and they're playing really good. They're one of the best defenses in the Pac-12. They are getting into Boykin's face on Saturday and really forced Boykin into some situations that he just hadn't been in thus far this year. And really a great job by Oklahoma State and their coaching staff. They do have a tough road ahead, and it starts on Saturday against Iowa State on the road. Not the toughest game, but if there's one thing, do not sleep on Iowa State. And if anybody should know that, it should be Oklahoma State. Is they were upset as the number 2 team in the country a few years ago with Brandon Wheaton at quarterback at Iowa State. Similar type of game, similar part of the season. You know, Iowa State had a pretty similar record. They're sitting at 3-5 right now. They were hanging right around 500 at the time of that game last season. And playing on the road in hostile environment, definitely a trap game. And definitely a game that they're going to have to look out for. And to round out the top 10, coming in at number 9, the LSU Tigers stick in the top 10 even after that tough loss at Alabama last week. And that's probably, I mean, not even probably, that's the reason why they're still in the top 10. You still got to look at it and say, hey, I mean, there's only a handful of teams that have been able to go to Tuscaloosa and beat the Crimson Tide, period. Ole Miss being one of the teams that did it this season. But, I mean, it seems like every team that goes into Tuscaloosa and beats the Tide becomes like a, you know, a class ESPN classic, you know. You know, that game in 2012 with Johnny Manziel and Texas A&M going into Tuscaloosa and beating Alabama. That was a great football game, and so was that Ole Miss game earlier this year as well. And LSU definitely still not completely out of the playoff picture. They will face Arkansas this week in Baton Rouge, and they'll look to get back on track. That could be an interesting game. Remember, Arkansas beat Ole Miss this week, and Arkansas and LSU are a long-standing rivalry, and it always seems to be a pretty good game. And we've seen Arkansas hang with a lot of the good teams in the nation this season, so we'll see what the Razorbacks have in store for this one. And man, what another crazy ending that was, the game last week. Man, I don't know if I've ever seen a play like that, last play in overtime where the guy just threw the ball up in the air, you know, on a fourth down just to try to keep the play alive. And what do you know? They were able to pick up a fourth down on that crazy play. It just adds to the highlight reel for this year, I guess. I mean, it started with a bang in week one with a crazy ending with Nebraska and BYU, and it's just kind of continued on down the road. And finally, rounding out the top 10, and number 10 is the University of Utah and the Utes. They picked up a nice win on Saturday against the Washington Huskies in a game that Washington was actually favored in, even though Washington came in with a 4-4 record. I talked about it last week as well. It was kind of a peculiar line if you're betting. It's like, how is Washington favored? But anyway, Utah and their team fits into the top 10, a one-loss team. Teams to be poised to be making a move towards the Pac-12 championship game, and they have to be rooting for an undefeated Stanford team, because if they are able to play against undefeated in conference Stanford team, because if Stanford goes the rest of the way, runs the table, they would have a win against Notre Dame on their resume as well. So that's something that would benefit the Utes' resume if they were able to beat Stanford in the Pac-12 championship game. But still, a lot of football to be played, a lot of more crazy plays to take place. But one thing that hopefully doesn't take place again is another blown call from an official. We saw it last week with the Miami and Duke debacle, and we saw it again this week on Saturday with the Nebraska and Michigan State game. And you may have noticed Michigan State out of the top 10. It's because they fell out of the ranks of the unbeaten last week, as they were defeated at Memorial Stadium by the Nebraska Cornhuskers. And on one end, you got to feel good for the Huskers, you know, with first-year head coach, Mike Riley, their season just hadn't been going well. They'd been in a bunch of close games and had lost some heartbreakers. That BYU Hail Mary I mentioned the first week of the year, they had a tough loss against Miami. And it's just, you know, coming in with a 3-6 record, they had never had in their program's history that many losses before the month of November. And I shouldn't say never, but it had been a very long time. And just an extremely proud program, and they hold the record for the most sellouts in any program in college football at Memorial Stadium. You know, so it was definitely a good, you know, for that program, you know, just to get a little momentum in there. And, you know, and that's a season-defining win for them. As they sit at 4-6, there's definitely no promises that they'll make it to a bowl game. But the one play, the game-winning touchdown that came with just a few seconds left in the ball game, came on a play where the Nebraska wide receiver went out of bounds and then came back in bounds and made the catch. But the officials ruled that he was shoved out of bounds when it was clear, even after looking at the replay, that that he wasn't shoved out of bounds, that he just went out of bounds on their own. And it was another case of an official missing a call. And these missed calls in huge spots, just, it concerns me. It really does, because if this keeps happening with these officials and the replays, they're going to get a blown call in at some point in a really big game, and that's going to be a really bad look for the NCAA. And if I were working for the NCAA, I would try to be getting this problem fixed right now. This is something that they just can't have and they can't stand for. I mean, if there would be a mutiny if there was a blown call in a playoff game. I mean, with all the chips on the table, and not to mention endorsements and, you know, and money, and I mean, this, you know, this isn't a joke. You know, college football is a big deal, and, you know, and there is a lot of at stake that goes beyond X's and O's. So, you know, the NCAA owes it to its players and coaches and the fans as well to get the call right. And I think that's the most important part. Just do what you have to do to get the freaking call right. It shouldn't be that hard. If I can watch on my couch on Saturday night and say that guy is clearly not pushed out, then why can't an official sitting in a room in New York who's paid to do it do the same thing? I guess that's the question for the day. All right, it's just past 4:40 here local time in San Rafael. We're going to take our last break of the night. When we come back, we're going to talk about the situation at the University of Missouri and the implications that may have been made because of the actions of some football players. So you're listening to Chalk Talk with Jeff Safford, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In biology, in English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me.
In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov, a message from the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day, and the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live united, take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Chalk Talk here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here on a Tuesday late afternoon. The sun has gone down and daylight savings time. Still not used to that. Still not used to it getting so dark. And we're getting colder too. Not to sound like, not to replace your local meteorologist, but frost advisories in place for tonight. They're saying tonight is supposed to be the coolest night so far this winter. So get ready, folks. And just to remind you one more time of content coming up this evening from right after me at 5 o'clock. Uncovered with DJ Soundwave will be coming up. She'll be showing you some music from YouTube cover artists. That's always fun to listen to. And also at 7 o'clock, first game of the women's basketball slate on Penguin Radio. Not an official game, just a exhibition matchup, but the Lady Penguins will be in action at 7 p.m. playing against Cal Maritime. And Stuart Horn will be on the call for that one from the Conlin Center. And make sure you stay tuned for women's basketball and men's basketball for the entire season. We will have the entire schedule and of the games posted for you on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu, and we will also be podcasting all of those games as well. All right, we'll get into the last few minutes of our show here, and the last thing I'll talk about was the situation that has been going on at the University of Missouri, and this story has definitely crossed the athletic boundaries. Absolutely, it's been all over mainstream news as well. Not that football news isn't mainstream news, but it's been more, I guess you could say, hard news, where it's been, you know, featured on, you know, News Tonight and CNN and all that type of stuff, and this is about something way bigger than football. And, you know, and but what brings football into it is that with the situation at Missouri, it's been kind of simmering for a long time. There are dates that are going all the way back to September of people of the African American community complaining about being called by names that are inappropriate. Specifically, racial slurs were involved, and when the president of the school, and when people from the community felt that the president of the school didn't have their back, this really just made the whole situation boil over, and it created a storm and controversy. And in the midst of that controversy, and where football does come in, is that the members of the African American community who were on the football team decided that they were all going to basically go on strike, and not, I guess you shouldn't say go on strike, they just were going to plan not to participate in any other football games. And I believe there were 30 athletes from the Missouri football team who were choosing to do this, and until the president stepped down, they were choosing not to play. And it's a strong statement, and, you know, and I have to give these guys credit. I mean, obviously, being members of a Division I SEC football team, you are in the spotlight, especially in a college town like Columbia, Missouri, where, you know, I'm sure a lot of these guys who walk into a restaurant or a bar, I'm sure they get the, your money's no good here type of stuff, you know, that comes along with being a football player. So they know they're in a position in society where their voice will be heard, and make no mistake about it, their voice was heard. And that's what this country is all about, you do have that right of free speech, and these players, they felt that their rights had been violated and that these racial problems had become to a point where it was unbearable for them. And they stood up against it. And I will definitely give them credit for that. And, you know, there's been a lot of protests that have are surrounding this this racial situation over the last year or two that have jumped over the line, you know, where guys have, you know, cemented themselves onto interstate and caused mass, you know, backups or, you know, stuff like that. But that wasn't the case here. There was, you know, these guys were just making their voice heard. And that is the important part of a protest, is get your message out there in a way that's productive, that's not going to, you know, that's not going to step on anybody's feet, and you're respectful about it. And these guys definitely were. And Tim Wolf, the president of the University of Missouri, has stepped down in wake of these protests. And I don't know if there is, I don't know if you should view it as these protesters won. At least I wouldn't view it in that way. I mean, I don't think there is a winner or a loser in this type of situation. It's just a tough situation, and there's going to have to be some healing that goes on. But one man that who's in a position of power on the faculty side of things is the head coach, Gary Pinkel. And I definitely give Gary Pinkel, the head coach of Missouri, their football team, credit for how he's handled this whole situation, because he didn't look at this as a race issue. He looked at it as, this is a player's issue, and he was behind his players and their actions 100%. And I think that's a really cool thing to have, that he wasn't just, you know, that he's more than just a coach. And you're looking at it, he is paid a lot of money to be a coach, but when you are a coach and you're a good coach, that means you wear a lot of different hats. And, you know, we've seen it a lot in our society with, you know, high school football coaches or youth coaches in general, where, you know, they're not just a guy you can talk to about stuff, you know, or talk about the zone read offense. You know, if you need somebody to talk to, or, you know, if you need a couch to crash on for a night, that, you know, your coach should be a good guy to go to. And Gary Pinkel looks to be that way for his players, that he is there for his players and that he cares about the well-being of his players. And that goes far and beyond in my eyes. And I definitely respect Gary Pinkel more as a college football coach now. And I'm sure his players in his locker room do as well. And, you know, and you probably look at future recruits, maybe this will sway them more towards Missouri if they look at a guy like Gary Pinkel and say, yeah, that guy's a good dude. And, you know, and I you know, because you look at where Gary Pinkel was, you know, maybe some people would make the argument of, oh, he had to do this, you know, if he didn't speak out, people would speak out against him, yada yada. I don't buy that argument at all. You know, Gary Pinkel didn't have to speak out. He didn't have to say anything. He could take the politician's way out, you know, the no comment route. He didn't have to say a word about any of this. He wasn't an administrator in the school. His job is to coach the Missouri football team. And that's exactly what he could say. He could have when a question about that issue came up, he could have said that this isn't something that I feel is my, that is something that I'm involved with, and he could have just kind of shrugged it off and came up with some political answer. But he didn't do that. He told it like it was. He said he was there for his players from the very beginning and did a great job of handling the whole situation well. And, you know, and for a place like Missouri that's already gone through a whole bunch, you know, thinking back to last year with the whole Ferguson deal and all that, and it just seems like there's a lot of tension that is built up in that area of the country. And, you know, the guys like Gary Pinkel and people like the players from the Missouri football team are, you know, show good examples of being active and standing up for what you believe in your community. And that's definitely a good thing. All right. Well, with that, we are out of time here this afternoon. We want to thank everybody for listening in. Make sure you tune in to DJ Soundwave. She's coming up in just a few minutes. And also tune in to the Penguin basketball game coming up as well. So for Jeff Safford, make sure you tune into Chalk Talk again next week. Appreciate everybody for listening in, and have a great night, everybody.